It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. While some criticize corporate input at the UN global warming negotiations, others say it's vital. For example, a team of investors, government, and climate advocates has developed an ambitious game plan to cut global carbon emissions in half by 2040. The group is called the Energy Transitions Commission, and as well as the chairman of Shell Oil, it includes former U.S. Vice President Al Gore, British economist Nicholas Stern, and former U.S. Senator and UN Foundation Chief Tim Wirth. Its new report is titled Better Energy, Greater Prosperity, and one of the report's commissioners, Rachel Kite, joins us now. She's the UN Secretary General's Special Representative for Sustainable Energy, and she spoke with Living on Earth's Helen Palmer.
The report basically says that there is a pathway to being well below 2 degrees by the middle of the century, and it depends upon clean electrification. So it means if we can clean up the electricity supply, if we can have massive inroads in energy efficiency, so the amount of energy that we use to do things, and if we electrify everything, including particularly transport, then we can get to an energy system which allows us to be well below 2 degrees, which allows us to be decarbonized by sort of middle of the century, and that is in fact affordable and feasible technologically. So it's important because this group of people are saying this is doable. So it's not an impossible task because of technology, because we believe that the costs of financing this are possible. And it's going to require enormous amounts of political will and real leadership, but it's possible.
What are the financial obstacles that stand in the way of us getting to where we need to be?
Well, actually, what's interesting about the work is that often we talk about the substantial amounts of sort of investment in infrastructure that are needed. But actually, when we went into this as a commission and we started looking at, well, what's the incremental cost of doing this in such a way as that we can have a pathway to clean electrification and we have a pathway to an energy system which is decarbonized and which is serving people efficiently. Really, we're talking about between $300 and $600 billion per annum over business as usual. So I think that's the number we have to focus on. That's not an order of magnitude number that is unrealizable.
So it's not exactly pocket change, but it's not break the bank either.
Yeah, I mean, it's a third of a nuclear submarine. It's not something that we can't imagine.
So what kind of carbon pricing mechanisms will need to be put in place to make this happen?
Well, I think the most important thing is that there is a price on carbon, and the commissioners are not prescriptive about which way to price carbon. But I think we all realise that the price has to be an effective price, i.e. the price has to be sufficient to drive down the amount of carbon in the energy system and the economy. And I think one of the problems we see around the world at the moment is that for many parts of the world, the price on carbon is too low to be effective. But so an effective price on carbon, and then also an effective use of public policy to not subsidise fossil fuels where, in fact, that's harmful.
What other public policies do you think need to be put in place?
There is a need to sort of level the playing field for renewable energy in many parts of the world. And by that, what we mean is that the institutions and the systems and the regulation of the energy system in most countries was designed around a model of a centralized fossil fuel fed, a grid that took fossil fuels and distributed that and transmitted that as far as it could be. I think what this report shows is that the energy systems of the future, in addition to being decarbonized, are going to be increasingly decentralized. So they'll be much more distributed. There'll be multiple grids. There'll be electricity generated off the grid. Buildings will generate energy and store it and feed it back into the grid. So it's going to be a much more modular and distributed system. And the institutions and the utilities and the regulations around that are going to have to shift. And so there's a really important role for public policy in embracing what energy systems of the future are going to look like and creating level playing fields for renewables to feed into the grid, to encourage more renewables, to encourage more distributed systems. And I think that there's a lot of good work going on around the world and we see real progress being made in many countries. But that's a big lift for government and it's a big lift for a new set of institutions. And I think that comes out very strongly in the report.
Yes, and particularly the situation of the developing world. Of course, in some instances, they're a bit ahead of the curve because they don't have big centralized systems. So putting in a modular system would be easier. But still, having the cash to actually do it is a huge, great hurdle.
Yeah, so I think that for many developing countries, they're facing a prior order of business, which is that they have large gaps in the access to energy. So you have countries where the penetration of electricity services is only perhaps for 20-25% of the population. So the prior order of business is we've got to get everybody energy. The good news is that because of the falling price of technology and because of innovations in business models as well, it's possible to imagine closing that energy access gap perhaps more cheaply and more quickly than had been the case in the past. So closing the energy access gap remains very important. And of course, also linked into that is the question of efficiency. We tend to think that efficiency is a question for developed countries. And of course, there are very, very energy intensive economies that need to make more progress. But for many developing countries, actually, the level of energy intensity in their economies is very high. You know, they're dependent upon heavy fuel oil or diesel for the energy that they do generate. And so for many developing countries, as they imagine growth and urbanization, it's important that they grow as efficiently as possible, that they really maximize their energy productivity.
It is obviously an existential question, this future of the decarbonization of the planet. Are you actually hopeful?
Well, I think that in my line of business, it's better to be an optimist and wrong than to be a pessimist and right. And so, yes, I am optimistic. But I'm also optimistic because as I travel around the world and I talk to government and I talk to mayors and I talk to leaders of private companies and I talk to bankers and financiers, you know, from a risk perspective, but also from the perspective of opportunity and more inclusive and cleaner growth, then the energy transition is fundamental. And people want to be at the leading edge of that rather than on the back edge of that. And that's true in Zambia and true in Chile and Morocco. And I've just come back from Tonga in the Pacific. It's true in the South Pacific. And I think it's also true in the cities and states of the United States of America. So, yes, I'm an optimist that we can do this. And I'm optimistic that we will do it. Where I think we really have to double down is the speed with which we do it.
That's Rachel Kite, CEO of Sustainable Energy for All. She spoke with Living on Earth's Helen Palmer.